Okay, we're rolling at the top of Bob's left.
Okay, it's April 15th. April 15th, we got Linus on here for round two.
Hello, hello.
Take it away.
All right. Well, what was just said, I said something about how I had a dream where I found Blast by Wyndham Lewis, and then I found it in a bookstore that day, and Paul asked, did that freak you out? And what I was going to say is that no, it really didn't. And that's the thing that's been happening over the past couple of years of getting into all your stuff, Bob, and the Xenocrates, is that they're really just kind of, it seems like they're trying harder and harder to be impressive, but they're having less and less of a kind of a whoa, freaked out or emotional effect on me that way, as far as like startling.
Right, you're getting used to it.
Yeah, so it's a strange effect getting used to it, because like, I posted on the Five Bodied there just a couple days ago about how, like, the things that happened over the course of April 4th were just absurd.
Yeah.
Like, did you read that?
Yeah, I read it.
That just got capped off by, like, I mean, if you had asked me what is the most Bobly Xenocrinous possible thing you could possibly hear right now, you know, I couldn't have done better than to hear that Zappa's Sons were coming to Toronto to play on Bloomsday.
Right.
Like, and then sure enough, that's what I find there.
But, and they're playing in your theater where you work?
Yeah. And yet it just seems like kind of a big, you know, it's like, well, I mean, what else do I expect?
Interesting.
Well, like, here's what I find. Remember, the fact that you're getting used to it and not surprised is the position you're kind of supposed to take. Because the Enduramine will just keep sticking synchronicity on you. And if you lose your balance, you think it's all about you.
Mm-hmm.
It is about something else. And I say it's about my chart and what the DNA in the chart, which goes to anybody who starts focusing on the present.
Isn't that saying exactly what you just said? You said you're going to think it's about you, and then you said, I say it's about my chart, and you said you put yourself into the chart, so aren't you actually falling for what you're saying not to fall for?
No, I'm saying the chart is not about me. It's not about me, the chemical body, or the astral body.
But in earlier recordings, you said that it was about you, and you put yourself into it.
Yes, there is that part in there, but it gets complicated because you got four bodies, so you have to ask which body is saying the statement.
Right, that's what I'm...
Yeah, so I'm expecting that's a formula that we're all involved in, regardless of me. You know, it's like F equals MA or E equals MC squared. It's the law of the world around us. So it's a law.
So you put a bunch of names on it for holy offices. So
no, because they
recognize. But then you got some of your own names.
No, I put in the collective names. I mean, people don't know McLuhan, but once you start looking into him, you'll find, man, this guy seems to have a great understanding of the 20th century or of the present. You know, and LaRouche is good on his level, and you got to juxtapose those different levels. That's quadriphenia.
These are figures who. They can carry some kind of a myth of actually understanding the present?
Yes, they are the ones who intuit the Xenocrony that the Enduramine has been building. Now, the Xenocrony means strange synchronicity. We're not to identify with the synchronicity, and you got it. You got to that point. We said, well, I'm not going to get carried away. This is normal.
Well, why wouldn't we want to identify with it? You didn't give any explanation why that would be a bad thing, like, you know.
Because we would assume we had something real going on. We'd think it could connect to something else, but it won't. Because the Enduramine operates on its own, as expressed by Bush. Bush ain't talking to anybody, and he ain't listening to anybody. I heard Al Franken the other day in Air America. They're always, Rush Limbaugh calls them drive-by media. So they're always finding scandals day in and day out. So Al Franken, I just turned in, and he said, you know, the bottom line is this president just won't listen to anybody. I go, case closed. That's what he's learned from all this stuff, all these scandals and things. And he says they're just falling off. Nobody deals with it. It's not affecting Bush. Because they think Bush is in the media. Bush is off the grid.
Hmm.
He's actually doing Xenocrity. He's avoiding all the synchronicity. He said, you think this stuff is about me?
Yeah, you know, a phrase that I thought of this phrase in connection to something else, but I realized it seems to apply is that there's this thing that a lot of people seem to be addicted to that could be described as the myth of impact.
Yes.
Like, everyone is hoping that if just enough people start talking about enough things, and finally one or two of these words will actually impact Bush and his facade will waver a bit.
Yeah.
But, like, it's pretty unlikely, I think.
Right. Now, that's because since the formation of a group mind or a meme is now obsolesced by the Android meme, then we turn, the public starts saying, oh, now's the time, unconsciously because it's obsolete, we can generate memes and affect people. That's what the harmonic convergence was. That's what all this meditation 24 hours a day by New Agers trying to affect consciousness. They think consciousness can be affected. Now, they could affect it if they realize it can't be affected via the chart.
Okay.
That doesn't make any sense.
Okay, let me...
Yeah, okay, no, you go on.
Let me just explain that. It's the fact that when you interact with me and start looking at some of my charts or themes or whatever,
right,
and you start having this synchronicity as Linus gets intensely, and other people do, I'm saying that's not caused by me. It's you becoming aware of the underlying law of this reality that the chart is pointing to. And so you're tuning into the ESP that's there all the time.
Right, now that makes sense because that sounds like what I was saying, so I understand that.
Right, okay, so now I've said it, I guess we should, if I got two people understand it, let's stop the tape. We've done it. I've communicated.
Yes, it's done.
But don't do that, because let's go into why I wouldn't do that, or what are we trying to communicate here to how many people?
Well, I guess what we're trying to communicate is what is the nature of this sort of it is me but it isn't me or some kind of interval going on.
And yes.
Maybe the clue is what you say when you responded to, I think, Mark Fetterman, maybe, talking about what the medium of the message means.
Now, is that mystic? Is that who that is? Or?
Yeah, he's the mystic guy. We argued over Manipian satire, I think. Is that what you mean?
I think so. Or it might have just been his...
his essay. And I said, look, you think the medium is the message. Right, I remember that post.
Yeah, because, and that what you were emphasizing is, like, you got it, you know, right, in quotes, sort of, but, like, mostly wrong, because it doesn't, the news is, folks, that the media don't affect us, they affect our language.
That's right.
Which we identify with voluntarily, and so buy into our language's dynamics, because we will identify our personalities with what we think, or something like that, or, I mean, all sorts of gestures. Just
you got it.
Kind of spontaneous, evasive gesture is a person.
No, you got it. You don't need to go anymore. Let me just compliment what you said, because that's exactly the point here. Traditional Zen yogis, Buddhist yogis, they always say you got to overcome your mind chatter.
Mm-hmm.
They call it your ego chatter, your mind chatter. The point is to kill your mind or not involve with your sub-vocalization or even what you're saying. But the point is that, in my essay on McLuhan, he goes past Krishnamurti and the previous traditions, because it's not, the mind is not the sub-vocalization of the verbal anymore, or body languages. It's a collective cloned ESP electronic amazing tactile environment.
Mm-hmm.
That's our mind, as McLuhan said, we've externalized the mind. That is what you have to stop identifying with. So the old traditional yoga is puny. It's only dealing with the chemical body and its chatter. And that's what you were just, to me, saying.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to, but I would update the meaning of the word language. But it's the tradition of working and getting aware of how language hypnotizes you, but realizing it's not your subverbal language or your body language or your chemical body apparatus. It's this collective TV body and chip body that is the new language that you have to dehypnotize yourself in some way from.
Yeah, and yes, indeed. And I'm thinking particularly in the sense of the Xenocrates is that, in a way, if I was going to have some kind of shocked or amazed or that I was going to react by jumping up and down or something, it could only really come from being shocked by the possibility of it. And I'm not shocked by that anymore because I'm pretty much used to it. So then all that's left is these kind of very... troublesome things about identifying with yourself, like that I'm trying to get back to what you were saying about how the Android meme would like you to think that it's all about you.
Yeah, that was
isn't.
Yeah, to the degree you can't detach yourself, you're still involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only recourse of the technology coming alive or the Android meme is to make you identify more and more that it's all coming true, that you were what you thought you were.
Mm.
Yeah, whatever your
there
fantasy.
Might be a, there might be a match in there.
Yeah.
But you have no preconceived ideas, though.
Yes, but it scans your preconceived ideas. But more and more people are inside the ESP effect of the TV body and then the chip body. So we have incredible ESP. We're all just one thought now, one thing. Mm. So therefore, the only strategy of technology in its perverse need to be to sort of run this world, and it does run this world, is to say, okay, it's not all about everything and just one thought. It's about you. You have a life, a future. You can fix this world. You can make billions. You can, whatever your fantasy is, you can be a psychic healer. You can be a criminal. You can kill a million people. You can blow up the world. Whatever your fantasy is.
And
it targets a million fantasies to a million individuals. Underlying that, and why that's possible, is because we're already so imploded in touch with each other. The metaphor of Rai, return to plane of essence, we're in the most heavenly Dante-esque vision of human unity you could ever have in this world technologically, that I call the cloning of ESP. And that's why when you start to detach yourself via the chart or any of the Bob stuff, you start to become aware of the ESP that's already there, which is, it always comes back to Bob's chart, you know what I mean? Or the people on it.
Yes. So, when you're saying that we are, you know, living the most kind of heavenly
intimacy
here. it's just interesting because, you know, clearly I can all just immediately imagine a crowd of indignant people, you know, responding about how there's still a lot of pain and confusion going around, and that, you know, what kind of a heaven is that or something. And so then it's almost, so then I get this strange wondering, like, well, if we actually are in that situation, like, who, but we can't appreciate it or something, then how much does it depend on there being people or some audience that's not us or some audience that's one of us humans or a couple of us humans who can actually perceive that? Does it really depend on that so much?
Hey, you know, I know
that it's heavenly.
Okay, let me...
Well, hold on, let me add something to that. I've noticed people with that particular meme that Linus was just talking about, for some reason people don't seem to perpetuate or enhance the contrast that goes on in life. So I don't really understand what heaven would be.
Right.
Because what's been explained to me through various mediums and stuff is doesn't really make sense. It doesn't seem like it would really be heaven, because contrast is what makes things so, you know, great.
Great, okay. All right, now... Yeah, I could say it's heaven, I could say this and that. Every word's going to be troublesome because it's loaded with assumptions. But just taking the word heaven, I would correct that with McLuhan quotes somebody, and he means it too, that man is language. Now, that would be this world. Humans make second nature, but the broad term for that is language. Now, language creates playfulness, tension, and all the emotions. In other words, humans are communication. Communication. So look at that term as a technical term. Now, the effects of the verbal era was a certain kind of fun and pain. Then the writing and print era was a certain kind of fun and pain. And actually, the print era said, we got to get everybody matching. Mm-hmm. So then, when we got an electric age, we got into immense matching from the print's point of view, but we were canceled out by the incredible diversity and making going on. So the dualism, or whatever you wanted to call that, Paul, you said the dialectic, the arguing, or the non-connecting, is here in the electric age, as well as incredible matching. So when we look at a television screen since the 50s, everybody's seen the same image, but then their brain has to make on that. So we're matching and making at the same time. We've got both ideas and dynamics of communication technically happening once we have television and it's live. Do you see what I'm trying to get? So heavenly can be whatever anybody thinks it is. But if you want to think of how do we get it, remember, Joyce took a guy who did Esperanto and embedded Finnegan's Wake with that. Because Esperanto was, in the late 19th century, a guy thought, well, if I write one language, we all speak and write this language, then we wouldn't have this Tower of Babel that he perceived, you know, 130, 40 years ago. So he didn't realize he was just trying to figure out a literate form of imploded matching. The radio era was going to create even more dissonance because it was a new medium. So from the idea of heaven as matching, we've really matched. But But then from other things, are we still there?
Yep.
Right. Yeah, man, we're here. Bob?
Yeah, you hear that?
Yeah.
What the heck is that?
Rumbling. Well, another vision of heaven is kind of like, not so much that it's good or pleasant or something intimate, but that it's finished. That it's
yes.
not evolving somewhere with all these strains and contrasts. So it's not necessarily, I mean, some people might say that's not like a positive vision, but like one of the main things about heaven is kind of like it's done.
The work is done.
Yeah.
And you know, McClellan went so far, he said creation is over. He said that back in the 50s. We've done it. And he's
trying.
Yeah, and it's understanding the fact that we extended our consciousness through television, through the monitor, that's a pretty amazing achievement, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's our head there. What you think is coming around your head or how your head, it's right there extended. So we completed the extension of our faculties. And then we went up that by extending the planet through the satellite. That was even more amazing.
Yeah, and then we get to immediate work extending our, I don't know, ability to call up what we just experienced as a memory immediately, I guess.
Yeah, all the instant replay stuff.
Yeah.
Now the next step is to destroy it.
And I say cold fusion does that. It destroys the disturbances of that.
Well, we don't know yet. It's still a little bit off, but I mean, that's
yeah.
a possibility. But
so
that's
you,
the next
how would you destroy it then?
How would I do it? I don't, I'm not participating in that. I'm just going to watch it and record it.
That's maybe a little too detached. You are involved. It is you, Paul. It's all about you. You are George Bush. You are nuking Iraq. You're going to nuke Iran. You are doing that. That's what I meant.
That's just what you see from your present level of awareness, but I'm not involved at all.
What was the first word?
What was the
word? You can see?
That's what it seems to you from your present level of awareness.
Oh, okay. Now, I'm trying to say it's not you.
Good luck.
It's like I'm saying, hey, it's sunny out. Don't you feel it? And you go, no, no, that's your view, Bob. It ain't sunny.
Well, if I have sunglasses on, it's, you know.
Yeah, but
my
I said
perception.
You feel the warmth. You know, feel the warmth. It's warm out.
Yeah,
the hot
yeah.
medium. That's why, you know, the weather metaphor is important because McClellan, when he said, I'm dealing with persons, I'm describing what we're inside of and probably we seem to share, if we're not perverse. It seems to be cold out today. That's
all
he was saying.
Share in before words.
What?
What we all share in before words?
Yes. Yeah, probably. Because he knew that words wouldn't do it. Remember he says in his letter to Pound on June 22nd, 1951, that words are now the drug.
Wait a second. If it's me, right, then if I... I can change it then.
You can act on yourself.
I can change it by hacking matter. What?
A voodoo doll.
Well, you're thinking of your me. Are you thinking of the guy with the two arms, two legs, the nose and all that? Is that the me?
Well, I don't know. I think of myself as a little more than that, but...
but the me I'm saying is more than that. You've got your TV body and your chip body, and the TV body is totally ESP.
Right, we can use those playful riffs on the body if you want. That's fine.
I don't consider them playful riffs. I'm trying to describe the weather we're in. Like if someone said, man, it's cold out, I said, yeah, well... Where are we? And, well, it looks like an invisible tactile environment. So it's very difficult to talk about this, you know, but...
Especially when we're trying to move into some AP situation of some
yes.
kind, and there's all these seemingly urgent half AP, half tied up in all these narrative language things going on that distract a lot of people. Like, particularly, one thing I was thinking of starting off with here, but I'll just toss it in now as a... I think it's a good one for you. It should go on these recordings because it got lost on Cloak and Dagger was what you had to say about the reptilians. And that you said you didn't recognize this category, reptilians, but that's a hallucination created by the holopathic computer satellite quadrant, and it's a hallucination of first nature ghetto eyes.
Yes.
And I thought that was very interesting. Well, because you told me last time I should go off and talk to Six-Bodied and tell him about how, like, look, like, Bob, like, guy Bob, he's not, like, a dumbass. He's got these people who are, you know, behind, like, Mark Stallman particularly, just you wanted me to say, like, convey to him that serious people involved in the real world think you're, you know, full of something other than shit.
Are you talking about Hex Booty?
Yeah, no.
Well, he said six, but, body.
Who was also Slackmaster K-O-N.
Oh, he's a friend.
Slack, yeah.
Is this on Cloak and Dagger?
I was talking to him about it.
So did you tell him?
Well, I told him that. I told him some of the things you told me about Mark Stallman and, like, about just about how, you know, like, you got to keep in mind that this guy, that the question of whether he's annoying on alt.slack is not the real question, you know, about this guy, because there's a lot of very involved and real people who don't exactly roll their eyes at him.
No, I mean, Don Field's a good case.
Yeah.
I try to balance it out myself. Roll my eyes and believe at the same time.
Yeah, I would
roll your eyes. Sometimes they come up double sixes.
Right. And I would add two more points to make a quadriphrenic. Totally, you know, try to kill me, not just roll your eyes, try to kill me, and at the same time worship me. So we get four levels here.
Yeah, I'm getting good at that.
So, but I did want to ask some, because I kind of was able to rant and describe, I thought, pretty well to him what
you just did.
What a hallucination of first nature ghettoize as a description of the reptilians that people talk about, or possibly as a, like, you know, I don't want to pretend I know what people have seen in their own experiences, but
right.
It makes some sense to me that if you were a, you know, mind controlled MK Ultra slave with God knows how many personalities from all the trauma you've been through, that, yeah, you'd hallucinate your masters turning into giant reptiles. That doesn't seem too far-fetched to me.
You know,
but I wanted to ask, I guess, like, because, you know, there's these things that seem urgent that aren't about your chart, that,
right.
You know, you might say are a distraction of one kind or another. But then my friend there, he was telling me that David Icky or Ike or
Ike, yeah,
David
it's Ike.
That he's going to be in Toronto a lot, like this summer or soon, because he's got court dates or something. And maybe that's not so important because he's being sued for libel by someone in Canada, I think.
Yeah.
But, I don't even know about it, but I guess I somewhere on there, either like, where is David Icky on your chart, or
oh, he's in the universal.
The universal quadrant. Or,
yeah, which has the aliens in that.
The problem of having to manage people's interest in these narratives that might actually be distractions, but they're going to think you're a conspiracy for telling them not to think about it.
If it right. was true, nobody would believe it, though. That's what's scary. I mean, think if that actually happened, some of the stuff that he said. Nobody would believe it. And then, you know, it could be actually true, or it could be based on some truth.
Well, you're saying
he's a pretty widely distributed author now. Seems like a lot of people believe
he's kind of controversial, but I mean,
I see him at the Barnes & Noble for the New York University. They have him by the cash register, like it's a big seller for college kids.
By the cash register.
Yeah, you know, when they come by their school books, they have that one that they stick the ones that are sell easily right there. That was a couple of years ago. I don't know if it's still going on, but yeah, definitely he is a...
He's pretty popular now since The Children of the Matrix came out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because since we're in a post-information society, then the wackier your information, that's for young people or anybody to identify with.
Yeah, that's one of the main reasons I really got into you, Bob.
Yeah. It's
not a wacky. Because that's literally my main criteria was like, and that's part of what got me into Marshall McLuhan, was that, you know, or Jean Baudrillard. It's just like the people who are serious and respected, but they said these wacky, wacky things.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And look at it. If we're imploded, the human perversity is, well, I want to separate out of this imploded ESP. And the chip body really allows you to go off in your own little zone. But it's the human perversity to block and merge. If we've super merged, then we've got a lot of blocking going to happen complementary to it. And that's what everybody does. So you got young kids. You can go through my chart for 56, 70 days. They charismatically bonded with apparent blockers, people who are snubbing the establishment icons. Those icons have changed so much that new phases, new decades, new generations had to snub other things. So the final snubbing for kids in the 90s for the information environment that they're forced to get jobs in is a guy saying wacky stuff like David Icke.
Okay, yeah.
That's an anti-environment.
That makes sense.
It doesn't really really get wacky until he starts talking about everybody being controlled by aliens.
Yeah, but that's all he's known by. All the other stuff is just from LaRouche's EIR and stuff from my chart. People on my chart is what he uses.
Yeah, the rest of it is just...
Yeah, right, so it's still... Yeah, it's still pretty good, and it's a good way to, you know, no matter how you get to the information, it doesn't really matter. But it doesn't really get wacky until he starts talking about bloodlines of aliens and all.
But that's all that gets communicated from. That's all that he is known for. He lays out EIR sources and all kinds of traditional historical conspiracy stuff, and no one maybe has read that, but when they read the alien thing and the Queen's reptile, that's where... Oh! Orgasm! Intellectual Eureka. And that's what he's known for, and that's his stigma. And that's all you can be in the TV body known for, is that kind of a stigma, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's an icon.
His name is Ike, too, not Ikey.
Oh, that's it. Ikey. Look at that, the E-Decade. He's an icon for the E-Decade. The E is the chip body, and he created a fantasy of information in a chip body world where there was nothing but endless information, therefore it all melted away. So he came up with the most ridiculous icon, an icky icon.
That's a good save there, man.
What'd you say?
That was a good save.
Okay, we're going to have a face-off over here then?
The glove hand.
Yeah. Zappa's glove hand. Remember, Zappa, McLuhan hasn't meet him as a massage, the goalie mask. He has the famous goalie from the Montreal Canadiens, Henri somebody. From the 60s. He has his face and mask as a main icon on the first page of Meet Him as a Massage. So he had the hockey making a save metaphor with the mask as an image of an icon put on. So I just realized Ikey is the E decade, which is what the 90s were known as, made icky.
Yeah.
Hey, now, Linus, you came to Bob through the Church of the Subgenius like me, right?
Well, I sort of, yeah. I came to Bob through a, like, being already kind of halfway between Subgenius and McLuhan.
Did you send your money?
Yeah. Well, that's a whole drama that's on alt.slack.
Yeah, I heard about that. Why don't you tell it a little bit, if you don't mind?
Well, I just, basically, Bob was suggesting I should check out alt.slack, because that's kind of, I was on the Cloak and Dagger board, and a couple of Subgenius boys came by and were trying to
drive by,
throw their big asses around, and say Dobbs is a fraud and y'all should shut up or something. And I was like, I didn't know who they were. Like, I didn't know Joe Cosby was like all over alt.slack. But so I was arguing with them, and probably little chance of any communication going on because I hadn't read alt.slack. And so I didn't know, for example, that they had been encountering you in that fragmentary form for years. Like, I just assumed that they hardly knew. They're like, oh, someone says they're Bob? Must be. But anyway, so then after that, I
said, go on over.
Yeah, go on over. But so I just read it for a bunch before I posted anything. Like, I read a lot of your archives on there, Bob, and I checked out a few different things and just kind of read it a bit for the... trying to get a feel for the dynamic, and basically the conclusion I came to is just like, there's no point in trying to, I don't know, like, say something to these people.
Yeah, no point in trying to match.
You should pay attention to this guy or something.
Yeah, no point in trying to match.
Yeah, and so anyway, so I kind of began talking about a theme of just like that it's funny that the Subgenius kind of try to pride themselves on being the trickiest church to get out of having a dogma and an orthodoxy or a heresy and not really having any of those. But they are a church, but it's all paradoxical. But so I was trying to make this point. Ah, but there is one orthodoxy, which is you have to think that Bob Dean is a dumb shithead. Because you're not even allowed to be a Subgenius unless you think that Bob Dean's a dumb shithead.
Which is a great point.
And then of course, like, I don't know, I don't think I was even responded to, really. Like, there were responses, but, like, I don't think that people were even responding to me, really. Like, I got a lot of hysterical, or not even hysterical, like, they're agitated that much, but just ridiculous or knee-jerk or beside-the-point swats that ended up proving my point, and I feel like I proved my point, that all proved my point. Anyway, stuff. But it got to the point where, very strange thing, where Ivan Stang responded to a question. First of all, once I started posting on there, Stang started putting a little bit more time into his posts where he's, like, dismissing Purple, and I got the feeling that he was writing for me, like, trying to preempt me doing something, because clearly if I'm there, I'm thinking of doing something. And, but I kind of got this feeling he was writing for me, and then I asked him one question, because he just had this post where he's like, oh yeah, and Bob was there, but he was disguised because he was afraid of what would happen if I recognized him. And he just left it at that, and so then I asked, like, well, what would happen? Because that's kind of, like, the meat of this whole issue, is, like, if Stang and Bob were face-to-face, would they, you know each other from before, or be Stang's pissed, or what? So I'm like, what would that be? He responded five-page response, where he basically introduced a fake me to alt.slack, and, like, said who I, told them all who I was and what I was all about.
That you were a dean, you came from over from Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, and like, you know, he had, like, it was strange because I was shocked at how much he was saying, and I was a bit indignant and yet also amused at the way that he was distorting it, because he was doing it, like, pretty skillfully but still pretty annoyingly. Anyway, it was just this long post, and there was a lot to digest, so I think maybe he was basically figuring whatever he says to this, it's not going to be adequate and it's going to screw him up.
Didn't you try to sign up and they sent your money back or something?
That's what ended up happening. Like, I didn't end up responding to this post for a full week.
Right.
When I did, I just hardly said anything. But in the meantime, I had kind of come to this greater vision of, like, parallel satire or something going on that made me finally realize that I had to send my money. I had to send my $30 because it's like I had a whole, over the years, appreciation of the Church of Subgenius and the way it revolves around the money, but that I never actually sent my money, and I didn't really, you know, think that it's supposed to be this way where you appreciate that as a joke, but you don't actually send the money. So I was like, okay, finally, I'm going to send the money. And also Revelation X book has it as, like, a ritual on your unbirthday.
Right.
So I did send it. That day was coming up, so I sent in my money, and I did send it, like I say on the net, I did send it earnestly, in the sense that I felt like Stang had won it in a way. But anyway, so I sent it to him, because the thing is their website is not even all that clear about how you're supposed to sign up.
Right, it's a maze.
You don't send it to Stang, you send it to